The Story of Esau and Jacob. The handsome young Isaac married the beautiful young Rebecca, and some time later they became the parents of twin boys whose names were Esau and Jacob. Esau was his father's favorite. He was born first, and being the older of the two boys was thought to be more important. According to the custom of the land, the oldest boy was thought so important he received twice as much inheritance as the youngest. He also received his father's richest blessing and was given the right to carry on the business of the family. This rich inheritance was called his birthright. And in this case, the birthright belonged to Esau. Esau was a big, strong, hairy fellow. He had had hair all over his body from the time he was born. That's why he was called Esau. Esau means all covered with hair. Sometimes twins look alike, but Esau and Jacob were quite different. While Esau was hairy all over, Jacob was smooth. He was very handsome and probably looked just like his beautiful mother. Certainly, just as Esau was his father's favorite, so Jacob was his mother's favorite. As boys and as men, the twins had very different interests and were not together a great deal. Esau was an outdoor type. He loved the woods and he loved to hunt. He was a big eater, and his interest in food led him to become a good cook. Sometimes, when he returned from hunting with some tender meat, he would cook it up in a tasty way and serve it to his father. This always pleased Isaac, and he looked forward to Esau's homecoming each time the young man went hunting. Jacob didn't care for the rough outdoor life. He was not a woodsman like Esau, but he was smarter. Smarter than Esau. Jacob was smart enough to take advantage of every opportunity, and one day, he saw a chance to get Esau's birthright away from him. Esau had been out hunting and had run out of food. By the time he reached home, he was weak from hunger. And when he came upon his brother cooking a big pot of food, Esau begged for something to eat. "Sure, I'll let you have some food," said Jacob, "but you'll have to sell me your birthright in exchange for it." All right," cried Esau, who could think of nothing beyond satisfying his hunger. "Take my birthright. What good is it to me if I die from starvation?" So Jacob got Esau's birthright away from him. But he couldn't claim the birthright, couldn't actually inherit what really belonged to Esau, unless he received his father's blessing. So Jacob and his mother Rebekah began to scheme how they might manage this. Their chance came one day when Rebekah heard Isaac tell his favorite son Esau that he would like to give him his blessing. Isaac was old and blind, and he felt he could not live much longer. "Before I die," Isaac said to Esau, "I want to bless you. Will you prepare for me another of your delicious meat dishes? When I have eaten once more of your fine cooking, I will give you my blessing." Esau promised to bring his father a fine meal and hurried off to go hunting. He must bring home some especially tender meat. Rebekah was much excited when she overheard this. She called Jacob to her and said, "Now's your chance, Jacob. You go to your father before Esau returns, and you get the blessing." "How can I?" asked Jacob. "You will pretend to be Esau," his mother explained. "But Esau is a hairy man while I have smooth skin. My father will know I am not Esau." "Your father is blind. He will not be able to see you."
"But he may feel me," Jacob objected. "And if he feels me, he will discover I am smooth. Then he'll know I'm not Esau, and instead of blessing me, he will curse me."
But Rebekah answered, "You just do as I say, and all will work out perfectly." Then Rebekah told Jacob to bring her the tender meat of young goats, and she cooked it just the way Esau would. Then she put Esau's coat on Jacob. So the meat was ready for Jacob to carry to his father, pretending he was Esau, and he was wearing Esau's clothes. But he was still smooth-skinned. To fix this, Rebekah took some goat skin, which was covered with hair, and laid that all over Jacob's hands and arms. She even covered his neck with it. "Surely now," said Rebekah, "surely now your father will think you are Esau and will give you Esau's blessing." So Jacob went in to see his father. "My father," he said as he entered carrying the platter of delicious meat.
"Here I am," said Isaac. "Who are you, my son?"
He knew it was one of the twins, but being blind, he wasn't sure which one it was.
"I am Esau," Jacob lied.
Isaac was surprised that Esau could have found fresh meat and cooked it in such a short time. He doubted that it really was Esau.
"Come to me and let me feel you," he said, so that I may know whether or not you are really my son Esau."
Jacob went forward nervously. Isaac touched him.
"Your hands are like Esau's," he said, "but your voice sounds like the voice of Jacob."
But the meat which Jacob had brought his father tasted just like what Esau always prepared for him. So Isaac decided this must indeed be Esau, and he gave Jacob the blessing. Believing it was Esau, he gave the blessing to Jacob.
"May God give you the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth," said Isaac as he gave the blessing. "May people serve you and nations bow down before you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may your brothers bow down to you."
Soon after this, Esau returned from the hunt, and then his father discovered the mistake he had made. Both he and Esau were broken-hearted, and Esau was very angry with Jacob. When Rebekah saw this, she told Jacob to run away and go to his uncle Laban, where Esau couldn't hurt him. And so Jacob was forced to run away. He had thought he was cheating Esau out of everything. Instead, he had cheated himself. The Story of Jacob's Ladder. Jacob left home and started toward Haran, where his uncle Laban lived. When he reached a place near Luz, he was tired and decided to spend the night there. He picked up a large flat stone which he found on the ground and laid it with its smooth side up to serve him as a pillow. This might sound hard and uncomfortable, but people quite often used flat stones as pillows in those days. During the night, as Jacob slept, he had a dream. He dreamed that a ladder stretched from the ground straight up to heaven. Angels were going up and down this ladder, and God was above it. In Jacob's dream, God spoke to him. "Jacob, I am the Lord God. Do you see the land upon which you lie? I give it to you and your children. You will have many children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. This land will be yours and theirs after you. In the morning you will leave here, but no matter where you go, I will be with you, and sooner or later I will bring you back to this land, which will then be yours." When Jacob awoke, he said, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I knew it not." Then Jacob took the stone upon which his head had rested, turned it up on its side so that it made a sort of pillar, and poured oil over it, dedicating that place as the house of God. "If God will be with me, and will give me bread to eat and clothes to put on, and let me come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God, and this stone, which I have set for a pillar, shall be God's house. And of all God gives me, I will surely give a tenth back to him." Although this place had been called Luz, Jacob called it Bethel, which means house of God. The Story of How Jacob's Name Was Changed to Israel. Jacob had worked for his uncle Laban 14 years, and he thought it was time to take his wives and children and return to his father's home. But his uncle Laban begged him not to leave.
"God has blessed me because of you," said Laban. "Stay with me. Name whatever wages you wish, and I will give them to you."
Jacob said, "I must look out for myself now. I now have a family, and I must provide for them."
"All right," said Laban. "I'll pay you whatever you ask if you will just stay with me."
"I'll stay on one condition," Jacob answered. "I'll stay if you will allow me to go through your flocks and take all the speckled and spotted cattle and goats and all the black sheep as my own."
"But of course," cried Laban. "What could be more fair?"
So Jacob took all the speckled and spotted cattle and goats and all the black sheep to form a herd of his own. He moved his family and his possessions 3 days' journey away from Laban. This gave each of them plenty of grazing land for their cattle. And Jacob continued to care for Laban's cattle as well as his own. But although Jacob was in charge of both herds and should have given equal attention to each, he spent most of his time caring for his own. So his cattle and sheep increased faster than Laban's. They were bigger and healthier, too. When Laban and his sons saw this, they were upset and became unfriendly to Jacob. Jacob felt uncomfortable about their unfriendliness. Finally, he decided he wouldn't stay there any longer. He'd just go away. So he told the servants to pack the camels with all his possessions. Then, with his wives, children, manservants, maidservants, cattle, and sheep, he started off without even saying goodbye to Laban. Jacob had been gone several days before Laban discovered it,
and angrily started after him. He was ready to fight, but it took him 7 days to catch up to Jacob. And in that time, Laban dreamed that God did not want him to fight with his nephew. So when he reached Jacob, he talked things over with him instead of fighting him. And they settled their arguments and became friends. As they parted, each going in a different direction, Laban said a short prayer.
The Lord watch between me and thee, while we are absent one from another.
Jacob started on again toward his father's home, and he now began to wonder how Esau would welcome him. It had been 20 years since he had cheated Esau out of his birthright and blessing. Would his brother still be angry with him? Perhaps there was a way to find out. Jacob called 2 servants to him.
I want you to go ahead to my brother Esau, he said. Tell him that I am coming, and that I hope to find grace in his sight.
The messengers went ahead, found Esau, and returned with frightening news. They said that Esau was coming to meet Jacob, coming with 400 men. This sounded like war, and Jacob was more frightened than ever.
I know what I'll do, he said. I'll send gifts to Esau. I'll send a drove of she-goats, a drove of he-goats, a drove of ewes, a drove of rams, 30 camels with their colts, 40 kine, 10 bulls, 20 she-asses, and 10 foals. I'll send each drove as a separate gift, and I'll put space between them so that they will arrive one after the other.
Jacob put a servant in charge of each drove, and each servant was to say the same thing to Esau.
This is a present sent by your brother Jacob to his master Esau. Jacob himself is behind us and is coming to see you.
These wonderful gifts were sent to soften Esau's anger, but Jacob wasn't sure that they would work. He spent that night alone in his tent, trying to find the courage to face Esau. And he tried to convince himself that Esau had no right to be angry.
He was born first, that is true, Jacob argued. But I was fitted mentally to be in charge of my father's affairs. Esau was never as well fitted for the birthright as I.
Then another voice began to argue with Jacob.
Face the facts, Jacob. You took your brother's birthright, and there's no excuse for cheating.
On and on the argument went. Jacob felt as if he were wrestling all night with another man. As morning came, this man said,
The day breaks, and I am weary of this argument. Let me go.
No, cried Jacob. I will not let you go until you bless me.
You want me to bless you? Asked the man. Then tell me, what is your name? My name is Jacob.
Then the man said,
From now on, you shall not be called Jacob. From now on, your name is to be Israel.
Then Jacob bowed his head, for he knew he had found favor with God. And Jacob came forth that day as Israel, strong, fearless, and honest. When he met his brother Esau, he was not afraid. He was humbly ready to face whatever Esau felt he deserved. As for Esau, he welcomed Jacob with generous forgiveness. And so, Jacob was able to return to his father's land in peace, as God had promised he would. Joseph and his coat of many colors. Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel, had 12 sons. He loved each and every one of them, loved each one in a different way. But it seemed to his 10 older sons that he loved Joseph best. Joseph was next to the youngest. Benjamin, the youngest, was Joseph's best pal. When Joseph was 17 years old, his father gave him a coat. Not an ordinary coat, but a coat of many colors. Red, blue, yellow, purple, and orange. Joseph was very proud of this fine coat. He showed it to everyone, turning round and round so they could all see its beauty. Joseph's little brother Benjamin was glad that Joseph had such a fine coat, for he loved Joseph.
But the 10 older brothers were jealous.
Our father Israel has never given to any of us such a fine coat.
They were actually so jealous they were unkind to Joseph. Now one night, Joseph had a strange dream. He dreamed that he and his brothers were out in the fields, tying up bundles or sheaves of wheat. Just as Joseph leaned over to pick up his sheaf of wheat, it suddenly stood up by itself, as if it had legs. And when Joseph's brothers leaned over to lift up their sheaves of wheat, their sheaves also got up by themselves and stood as if they had legs. Joseph was about to say something about this strange occurrence when he saw that his brother's sheaves of wheat were bowing to his sheaf, bowing lower and lower and lower.
It was as if they were saying to Joseph's sheep, "We are your servants, and humbly regard you as our king."
When Joseph woke from his dream, he laughed right out loud. It was such a silly dream, it was fun.
It seemed to suggest to him that someday he would be a great ruler. And Joseph liked this idea. Pleased with his dream, Joseph told it to his brothers, expecting them to laugh about it too.
But they didn't like it. "You think you'll rule the world someday, don't you, Joseph?" they sneered. "Well, wait and see. You'll never be anybody."
Soon after this, Joseph had another dream. This time, he dreamed that he was looking up into the sky, where he saw the sun, the moon, and 11 stars all at one time. And the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars were bowing up and down, up and down, up and down. They were bowing before Joseph. Yes, the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars were bowing down to Joseph in his dream.
Joseph thought this dream was even more fun than the first.
And though the first dream had annoyed his brothers, he told them the second one as well. And this time his father Israel was present when Joseph told his dream.
Again, Joseph's brothers were angry. Even his father was angry.
"What does your dream mean, Joseph?" his father asked. "Does your dream suggest that your father as the sun, your mother as the moon, and your 11 brothers as the 11 stars will someday bow down and serve you?"
Israel was quite upset by the thought that Joseph's dream might have the meaning he suggested. He believed it really might mean that Joseph would one day rule over all of them. Joseph thought about his dream, too. He thought it would be wonderful to be a great ruler. Sometime after this, Joseph's older brothers left home to take their flocks of sheep and goats to better pastures. When they'd been gone for some days, their father became anxious to know how they were and how they were getting along with their flocks. So he asked Joseph to go in search of them and bring him news. Joseph put on the fine coat of many colors of which he was so very proud and started out. He had no idea exactly where he might find his brothers, so he kept asking all along the way. Finally, he came to a man who had seen them. Joseph followed the directions this man gave him, and at last he saw his 10 older brothers in the distance. At about the same time, they saw him.
"Look," cried one of the brothers. "Here comes our young brother Joseph, the dreamer."
"Let's get rid of him," cried another. "Yes, let's. Now's our chance to get rid of him once and for all."
So when Joseph joined his brothers, they grabbed him and threw him into a deep pit, the sides of which were so steep there was no chance of his getting out. But Reuben, the oldest of Joseph's brothers, could see that this was the wrong thing to do, and he planned to rescue Joseph. After the others had left, he planned to return and pull Joseph out of the pit. But he didn't quite see how he would manage this, and he thought if he went off by himself, he could think things out better. So Reuben left the others. And while he was gone, some Midianites passed by on their way to Egypt. When Joseph's brother Judah saw them, he said, "Let's sell Joseph to the Midianites. They're merchants. They're interested in buying what they can sell at a better price. They'll buy Joseph from us and sell him to the Egyptians as a slave."
The others thought this was a good idea. So while the oldest brother Reuben was gone, they pulled Joseph out of the pit, took away his coat of many colors, and sold him to the Midianites. When Reuben returned and learned what the others had done, he cried out, "What will we tell our father?"
"We have Joseph's coat of many colors," one of the brothers said. "We'll make his coat look as if Joseph has been killed by a wild animal. Then we'll show the coat to our father and just tell him we found it."
Of course, this was a cruel thing to do to Israel. When he saw Joseph's coat of many colors, the only coat of its kind in all the land, he was sure that his beloved Joseph had been killed by a wild animal. The days that followed were very sad ones for Israel. He had no idea that Joseph was still alive.
As for Joseph, he was sold to a man named Potiphar, a captain of the guard. As Potiphar's slave, no longer even a free man, it must have been hard for Joseph at this time to believe he could ever become the ruler he had dreamed of being. He didn't know that his being sold as a slave would later lead to his dream coming true.
The Israelites at the Red Sea.
When Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt, he saw that a large cloud moved along the sky just in front of him. Moses followed this cloud, which was red like fire by night and was pure white by day. By the end of the first night and day, the cloud had led them to the shore of the Red Sea. The Israelites wondered why they'd been led here. The Red Sea lay in front of them, and high mountains rose at their back. Where would they go from here? Which way could they go? The only way which lay open was the road back to Egypt. Just as the Israelites were getting ready for bed, they looked up and saw a frightening sight. Pharaoh had again changed his mind about letting them go and was now coming after them with a huge army. The Israelites were hemmed in between the mountains and the sea with no way of escape. Bitterly they cried out against Moses, "Why have you brought us here to be killed? Why, we should have stayed in Egypt as slaves." "Don't be afraid," said Moses in a strong, confident voice. "Stand still and wait until the Lord tells us what to do." Moses knew God would take care of them somehow. As he waited to be shown the way, God spoke to him and said, "Go forward, Moses. Lead your people forward." Moses hesitated. If he led his people forward, he would have to lead them right into the Red Sea. Then God spoke again. "Lift up your rod, Moses, and hold it toward the Red Sea so that the water may be separated. Then you can lead the Israelites across on dry land." Moses stretched his rod toward the Red Sea, and suddenly a strong wind came up and pushed the waters back, leaving solid ground where the water had been. The wind continued to blow, holding the water back and forming a great wall of water on each side. Quickly, Moses stepped upon the path which lay before him and led the people of Israel to the other side. And so the Egyptians were cut off from the Israelites and were never again able to recapture them.